back to school, back to school, to prove to Dad that I'm not a fool. I got my lunch packed up, my boots tied tight. I hope I don't get in a fight. Oh, back to school, back to school, back to school. Well, here goes nothing.
Back to school month here on Baby Oil and Blow. We've lamented the end of summer, and now we turn towards the worst part of the year. Back to the school, probably the three worst words you could hear together when you're a kid. Like just the idea of
back to school.
Just make your stomach sink.
Oh.
Start being those ads around this time of year.
On the
commercials, like back to school sales, back to school, blah, 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 blah. I love it now. Because I don't ever have to go to school again. So I'm just like, you fucking stupid kids got to go back to school.
Yeah.
It sucks for you, but I don't care.
Not ever having to go to school again in your life is one of the best feelings in the world.
Feeling.
But then it's also one of the worst feelings in the world. Anytime, like, for a job or something, they're like, hey, you got to go to this, like, 8-hour class.
Oh, man.
And, like, to have to sit there for 8 hours and educate yourself on something.
My being bored all day muscles hasn't been worked out because
worst
I haven't
feeling.
Been in school for so long.
Yeah.
That's one of the most valuable things you learn from school, how to be bored all day long and not go insane.
You went to a public school, right?
What do you think? Parents are shelling out for private school.
Yeah, well,
living in no gated neighborhoods.
Around here, there's nothing wrong with going to public schools.
I think around here, you got to go to a Catholic school if you're going to like a private school.
Yeah, well, that's what I did. I went to private.
I ain't getting
schools.
No church in me.
What I'm driving at here, pal, is when you had to go back to school shopping for clothes, it was
that's
probably
right.
a fun time. Like, I'm no,
this is the worst thing in the world.
I figure like you get
it.
To like pick cool clothes.
Oh
like,
yeah, I love going to the mall with my mom and looking at clothes. No, fucking dude, ended me just like screaming every single time.
I just figure like, oh, I'm gonna get this crow shirt. I'm gonna get that crow shirt. It's gonna be awesome. I can't wait to wear that to school. Not for me.
No.
It was like,
no, thank you.
You're wearing a uniform. Go try on these Bugle Boy slacks.
Ooh.
And this starchy white polo.
Bugle Boy slacks that he's wearing?
They were.
You had to have like your little thing, though. What'd you do as your little thing to be like, yeah, I'm wearing the uniform, but there's no rule against this, so this is what I do to stand out.
It wasn't more till high school.
Oh, fuck.
When I started doing that. We started wearing bowling shoes instead of dress shoes.
Well, you're really sticking it to the man
then
there.
Then the nuns realized we were wearing shoes that clearly we had stolen.
That makes a lot of sense.
And then they were like,
against that.
Yeah, you can't do that no more. We ruined a lot of things for the quote-unquote dress code at high school to where they eventually switched to more uniforms.
Futuristic jumpsuits, just one pieces.
In grade school, it was black pants, white polo, maroon cardigan sweater.
Oh, man.
You know, it's we had the...
Name.
Well, it was all right because we had the Kurt Cobain sweaters going back in the
90s. Sense. Yeah, that was popular at the time and is again.
Yeah, it is again. But
90s are back.
In high school, it was just dress code. Like you had to have, you know, collared shirt, ties in the winter, polos in the summer.
Ugh, gross.
No jeans. It was my freshman or sophomore year. They introduced the no booty pants rule for the girls.
What were booty pants considered at the time?
Yeah, like the spandexy. Like
so
the girls.
This was before the advent of leggings.
Right,
leggings
right.
were not a thing back then.
But
if they were, people didn't know about them.
If you remember,
reason.
Like when we were in high school, girls like they had like a.
I
they
just
were
remember
like, they're black.
All of them being in baggy-ass clothes, and you having no idea what any of them looked like with their clothes off, so it was a crapshoot.
Oh, that was the one good thing about...
I don't even know who's attractive, because it's the late 90s.
This is the one good thing about private high school.
Everybody's got baggy-ass clothes and mom hair, and I can't even tell who's attractive and who isn't.
They had to wear blouses, so you had a good idea what was going on under there. You know what I'm saying? And then, like I said, they would wear
give
the booty pants
and a blouse,
which were like spandexy.
Mm-hmm.
But so they were tight on the butt, but they usually like flared at the bottom. Flare was very in.
Flare,
in the
yeah.
90s for the girls.
I remember flare.
I dress myself in cashmere. Woo! 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 I dress myself in $100 pleated slacks. Who made this coat? Hugo Boss, Armani, you set up broke hell. My life just started, Jack. I'll wear a $15,000 Rolex and you get on Space Mountain. You'll be like this. And now, you and I are limousine ride. Jet flying. Can't steal it. Wheel a dealer. Son of a gun. Who are you? Diver, tell me how to wrestle. Bright lights. Big cities. I am Rick. The President of the United States that kissed all the girls in the neighborhood and made them cry. Kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, limousine riding. Bischoff, you turn the camera off and I'll be naked when you come back.
Well, if you're going to wear those big ass chunk sandals, you know,
the
platform sandals,
the body suit. Mm-hmm. And some like low rise jeans over them were the most revealing outfit you'd get back in the mid 90s. I remember every time a girl would rock one of those, it'd be like pretty racy, pretty good.
Let's get back into
education in the 1990s. You see where we're leading here, because we're talking back to school. We got to talk. First thing we got to talk about is The Substitute from 1996. It's maybe the most prominent action movie set in a school that's ever existed.
What was that one Jimmy Belushi did?
Oh, The Principal?
The Principal with Louis Gossett.
Yeah, little Lou Gossett action.
I'll tell you right now, that's a fine Belushi film.
Mm-hmm. We can move on to that a little bit, just to get some class of 1984 kind of similar.
Yeah,
it got a little bit more over the top and violent. And then,
correct.
You know, things in the 90s, we finally reached the full evolution with The Substitute here, where shit just goes off the fucking rails.
They were like, oh, what if we made the movie Dangerous Minds but made it cool?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though I'm pretty sure that movie came out after this.
Who knows? Yeah. The movie's fucking dumb. The Rundown this week is brought to us by Paramount Pictures' remake of Face Off, which got announced in the trades today.
I'm sorry. Excuse me?
Putting together a little script.
What?
They're going to remake Face Off. That's the next big thing on their docket.
With who?
No one's attached.
Who's making this?
Just hired somebody to write it. All we got's a script. There's no director. Fucking somebody who wrote something dumb and modern. Some little turd.
When are we gonna stop remaking everything?
I don't know. As long as Paul Dano gets attached, I'm on board. I've started the campaign today. Get Dano in that Face Off.
I think I'm having a stroke.
Or just bring back Travolta and Cage. They could still do it. Have them play opposite roles in a meta exercise. The Substitute from 1996 has a runtime of 114 minutes, which is about 14 minutes too long, if you ask me.
Wait, it was how long?
114 minutes.
Oh, yeah. You always do that, and like every time you do that, I'm like, 1 hour and 14 minutes? That's not how long it
is. Hour's not 100 minutes. It's 60 minutes. We got to do this math. Turn it into homework, which I
math,
guess is
I'm okay. That's
appropriate for back to school month.
I got to get my life together.
Budget, I couldn't find any info on what the budget is, but hopefully it wasn't much, because our gross is only $14.8 million domestic, so...
Tom Berenger made this movie out of his own pocket.
Blew up a lot of stuff in this movie. Hopefully they got a good deal on all those explosives.
Yeah.
Director is Robert Mandel, who you know from directing FX in the 80s and School Ties.
Ooh,
that movie where it turns out that Brendan Fraser was a secret Jew.
Yep.
Never saw that, but there was a lot of ads for that back in the
day. There were,
over and over again. They advertised the shit out of that movie. And The Rage, Carrie 2.
Oh.
Dabbles in every little genre.
Oh.
Stars, of course. This is the name of the game right here. Tom Berenger is our big star.
Hell yeah.
He's playing Shale, a.k.a. Mr. Smith.
Mr. Jim
former
Smith.
Former government badass turned merc turned high school teacher. You know Tom Berenger from being in Sniper, being fucking Barnes from Platoon, being fucking Jake Taylor from Major League.
Yeah.
You don't know Tom Berenger. Fucking do your homework.
He goes full dong in that weird movie.
Berenger's dong in something?
Daryl Hannah and Kathy Bates.
Ooh, I don't think I have ever seen Berenger's dong.
John Lithgow.
I'm going to have to look that one up.
Shows dong in two films, I think.
Does Mr. Skin list dong shots, or are they strictly female nudity on
the site? No, there's a Paris publication.
Ooh.
That keeps track of nudity and gives out ratings.
Is there?
They gave him a 3, which is their highest rating.
That's a weird for a highest rating.
It's old gay Perry, man. Who's
okay.
to say?
Yeah, I don't know. Damn it.
It could start at like a -8.
My idea for DirtyDongs.com has apparently been taken by somebody in Paris.
You just got to pirate half of what they're doing and then
$1 million idea.
Your work's done.
Diane Verona is playing Jane, Berenger's school teacher girlfriend who gets kneecapped by her own students. She worked with the other Chicago icon, Brian Dennehy, in the aforementioned movie FX. So this
That's
is
true.
Her fucking batting for the circuit or whatever they say now in sports.
Cycle.
Or whatever.
Either way.
Yeah, she's got it. She's Berenger and Dennehy. Nothing better.
No.
Jules. Favorite actor, Dennehy. Favorite drink, old Dole's. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls. Say goodbye a little longer like I ate a piece of Big Red. Grew a mustache the size of Mike Ditka's forehead. Hair comb to the side, looking like a piece of foam. Buick speakers, red cooler, 85 Bears Ubers, Polar sausage, Bratwurst. Walking like my cockers, Stacey Adams, no shirt. Jules to get a case of Squirt. Wife's pissed cause I forgot to get the minute rice. So I'm back in the damn Buick to get a stinking bag of ice. To get a stinking bag of rice. My wife Jules is cute, her taste really moved me like I ate Juicy Fruit. Had me dancing like Chris Penn in Footloose. 85 Walter Ruse, old style pack of coos. Go to Ace, no tolls and weed whacker fuel. 85 Bear Subas, Stacey Adams got ruined. Flood a basement sump pump, shop vac, clean up. Cook brats, cook chops, your heat shouldn't be that hot. Keep your juices in the chops, keep your juices in the brats. Serve them on paper plates, tater salad and grape pop. My favorite actor was Dennehy long before he played night. When Berenger was a substitute, everything was going right. Even after Jordan left and Dave Corzine retired. Sean Dunstan's wild throws and Mike Ditka got fired. Favorite actor, Dennehy. Favorite drink, old Dole's. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls. Play softball with the guys. Wife made curly fries. Drank about 4 Dole's. Grounded out 2-pot flies. In the Buick, down Western. Stop and get some more brats. On sale chicken, Italian sausage, and orange pop. This week, fishing trip. Gotta get some new flies. Wife packed turkey subs, Jay's chips, and peach pies. Watch a little Dennehy. Pull out the laser disc. Sniper 1, 2, and 3. Berenger makes great flicks. Listen to the shuffle. Rewind Richard Ditt's part. Damn, I left those orange pops in the trunk of the Skylark. Sneak a couple old Dole's. Shit, there's my damn wife. You know, honey, I'll be back. I gotta get some more ice. Back in the damn Buick. I should go to the damn bar. I saw Ditka once in the Eatons in a sports car. Favorite actor, Dennehy. Favorite drink, old Dole's. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls. Play a little poker. Spend time with the wife. Take her out to Bennigan's. See if they cook chops right. Go and get a laser disc. Projection screen TV. Portillo's Italian beef. And a movie star, Tommy B. Back in the damn Buick. Cut on WCKG. Caught a song by Glenn Frey in an interview with Dennehy. So I'm driving down Western Ave. Think I'm gonna stop at Zayers. Got a splitting freaking headache. So I popped a couple bears. So I'm back in the damn Buick. Think I need an oil check. The baddest of George Thorogood. Smoke stones on my deck. Read the sports section. Bears and their O-line. Trying to find a decent Fiero with a for sale sign. Cut on WCKG. Huey Lewis and the news. The heart of rock and roll is still beating. Do Bears news. Favorite actor, Dennehy. Favorite drink, old Dole's. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls. Favorite day, Sunday. Favorite team, the Bears. Favorite store, Ventures, Sayers. Favorite show, Danza. Also, the news. Weatherman, Skillin, music, the Bulls. Favorite actor, Dennehy. Favorite drink, old Dole's. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls.
Mark Antony is playing Lacus. He's the high school punk who's in charge of the gang who's ruling the school here while wearing Nike tracksuits the whole time. You know him from being a pop singer in the 1990s and fucking Jennifer J-Lo. Lopez.
Yeah, I told
and having a brief speaking role in Hackers.
I told the little lady that he was a very young Mark Antony was in this movie.
That's right.
Playing a young Cholo.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, is he still ugly back then?
Ooh,
and I was like,
rough.
Yeah, he's pretty ugly.
We'll get into Mark Antony. Ernie Hudson, let's round it out here, is playing principal role as a former cop.
Role A, former
cop, still a corrupt asshole. He's the dickhead boss that Behringer has to deal with when he's going into this substitute role at this school in Miami. Tagline for the substitute: the most dangerous thing about school used to be the students. Which, well, that's turned back around, because these days that's absolutely true again.
Yeah.
This is pre-Columbine here. We're getting the substitute. Right. So. Whew.
Pretty cool tagline, though.
The plot, all these plot synopses I found were really long. So I found a short one from IMDb user Harun Mehmedinovic.
Common spelling?
Yeah, that's right. All right. After he did some jobs for CIA.
Yep. Keep it going.
Ex-Marine John Shale is visiting his high school love, Jane. She's now a teacher in Columbus High School in Miami. Soon after his arriving, Jane has her kneecap broken while jogging. After that, John decides to go undercover as her substitute in high school. Very soon, he finds out that gang named Kings of Destruction is terrorizing the school.
Oh, the COD. K.O.D.
Shale is going to give everything to stop them. Even his own life. That's a spoiler that doesn't happen right there in this plot synopsis.
That's true.
But it's short enough that all the websites out there are using it. So this is a welcome opportunity if you want to get your name out there. Maybe go write a better plot synopsis for the substitute. I'm sure people will start using it.
Yeah, people could use that.
For sure. Let's get into bullet points here.
Yeah.
This is where we dig into our notes and we discuss all the little things that stood out to us as we were watching The Substitute from 1996, starring Tommy B.
They do it right here. I like this because what this movie's doing right here.
What's it doing?
You complained about it being an hour 45. It could have been
ish.
It could have been 2 hours long.
Oh.
But they did us a favor here.
What'd they do?
They get rid of the little character backstory. They just get rid of it. Get it done right out the gate here.
That's right.
This is all you need to know about the guy. He's a mercenary.
It's a nice...
He's on a mercenary mission. He has mercenary friends.
Very, very common shortcut that we get. We were doing in this first scene where the guys are just watching a newscast about themselves. So, like, the newscaster just in a very explicit way just fills us in on everything we need to know.
Well, it starts before that. Like, they pick Behringer up at the ass end out of the...
We're in a mission in Cuba?
The shot mission in Cuba.
It's, we're doing some off the records, not supposed to be in Cuba, but we are anyways, CIA black ops bullshit. But some of Behringer's guys get smoked, which seems to be a theme that's going to go out there.
Oh, yeah, they lost three of the guys.
And so now we got three dead Americans in this other country that they're not supposed to be in. So now fucking, you know, we got to make these guys disappear. We got to deny that they exist. We got to deny the government's got anything to do with them. So they're out of a job.
We got to A-team these assholes.
They can no longer work for the government. They got to turn into some kind of A-team. They're going to be mercs. They're just, you know, going to slide right into being mercs. Or this is the plan. This is what we're establishing in this first scene where we've been talking a lot about, like, music lately. And, like, we're just like, ooh, yeah, this music really... This music does not set the mood in this movie. This sounds like some 60s spy show bullshit that we got playing over, like, these initial...
I don't recall the initial, like, action scene music.
It sounds corny as hell. And I was just like, ooh, this is not setting a good tone for The Substitute.
Well,
thankfully, it evens on out a little bit later.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad as I initially feared going right into this opening scene.
Without getting too far into it and jumping the gun here, The Substitute...
Mm-hmm.
Fails
mm-hmm.
when it leaves the classroom.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to agree with that wholeheartedly.
When the substitute keeps it in the school, you're getting great shit.
That's right.
So, yes, I will agree with you. This scene seems a little out of place, almost like it was filmed at a separate time or something. Mm-hmm. Like,
so this is one of the threads that sort of weaves its way through my watching of this was my constant wondering, was this just two scripts that already existed that they just mashed together to make The Substitute? Did they take some sort of A-Team-esque movie about, like, a group of mercs and then a movie about, like, a badass who becomes a substitute and has to fight kids? And did they just, like, haphazardly cram the two of them together? Because that's what it feels like, especially because we're introduced to this team of mercs that Behringer has, and they're fucking badass.
We got
some Luis Guzman in here.
Who doesn't love him?
William fucking Forsythe is back on Baby Oil and Blow, doing
second
some great
appearance,
shit again.
Being a mercenary again.
And it's like, why in a movie about a guy who's a substitute in high school where it's just like a very singular thing that you're doing alone.
Right.
Does he have a whole team behind him? It really makes no sense. And like these guys get introduced and it acts like they're going to be like a big part of whatever's going on. But then they got to disappear for the entire fucking movie until the very end. And it's just like, it's so
weird. It's a little shoehorn.
So weird. Why do you put together such a badass crew of dudes and then like just fucking get rid of them while we spend all this time with Behringer and his girlfriend?
Yeah. So they get out of war-torn Cuba. You don't really see much action there. You understand they're ghosts.
Back into war-torn Miami.
But exactly. We get thrown into fucking southern Dade County, Miami, Florida.
Yuck.
And it's beautiful. And it's full of 1996 gangster rap.
Mm-hmm.
Kids fighting each other.
That's right.
Gang warfare.
Some graffiti.
Teachers.
Baggy pants.
Trying to keep the peace. They got their school statue surrounded by a chain link fence.
This is a thing
so the kids
in
can't
the 90s,
vandalize it any further.
The urban high school and a white person has to come in and teach at it movie. So many of these things got made. We even got an excellent spoof movie, High School High, starring
Sir John Lovitz. Yeah.
Making fun of all this shit.
You boys ought to be ashamed of yourselves. School is no place for fighting. What are you looking for?
I'm looking for the rest of your posse that's going to keep me from ripping you a new asshole.
I will pretend for the moment that you meant that in a nice way. But I am warning you, I'm about to lose my temper. Now, I want you boys to shake hands. Go on. There. See? Now, that wasn't so bad, was it?
Huh?
It's always best to shake hands. Unless someone just sneezed into it. What if they have a stump? That could be a little weird. All right, now go on, everybody. Get back to class.
Like a rhinestone cowboy.
That's right. Yeah. That's another movie.
Right.
That just, I feel like, was advertised to death. Like, for some reason, there was a huge ad budget on High School High.
Did you ever see that one?
Oh, fuck yeah. Opening weekend.
I didn't see it.
I remember it as being pretty funny.
It's probably got to be great. I bet Lovitz kills it.
Like always.
Oh, man.
We're in a movie that seems like a budget-level A-team, and then suddenly we're thrown in a movie where this white lady's teaching at a rundown high school full of...
It's a real gangster's paradise.
Scary, scary Latino and African-American kids, and we're just getting a lot of, like, urban porn shots of how rundown and how dangerous it all is, and it all seems pretty extraordinary, but cut to the chase. Mark Antony, he's established as, you know, being a badass cool guy who's like sexy and all the women want him and everybody's afraid of him and he's in charge of this gang,
tough
which is
guy, gang baby.
Number one problem I have about this movie, because Mark Antony is such a just little weaselly turd.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like I don't buy for a second that he's a gang leader. I don't buy for a second that he's supposedly a badass. I don't buy for a second that he's like all intimidating and like we're supposed to be afraid of him and then we need Tom fucking Behringer to come in and like deal with him. This is a problem for the substitute. We should have got, like, I don't know, bring in Machete and just have him play a teenager.
Nah.
he could just be the teenage kid.
I'm telling you, that's how these gangs work, man. It's not always
some little
so
wiener in a Nike tracksuits.
If you wield the power, you wield the power, my man.
Perceived power is
whatever
the fuck Ernie Hudson says.
Oh, I gotta ask. Doesn't it make you nervous wearing a watch like that around here?
This watch was a gift from the Junior League. Anyone trying to take this watch is going to have to take this off.
Well, it's been known to happen. Hell, they hack them off with chainsaws now.
Students in woodshop make these for me. Every year at first assembly, I give a little demonstration. Power perceived. It's power achieved. I'd remember that little truism, Mr. Smith. It will assist you greatly in your teaching.
You know, it's not always the guy you think it is.
He runs afoul of old Jane, old Behringer's girlfriend, though, because she breaks up some fights that are going on, and then he's just like, yo, bitch, like, we're going to get back at you for just doing your job as a teacher because we're pieces of shit little kids.
You went into the gangs and the students that were there, and I want to point it out real quick. One thing I'm glad this movie didn't do is be like, whoa, we're not racist, though. Here's like a gang of skinheads.
Yeah,
or like
this movie was
crazy,
just like,
metalhead white guys. Like,
we're racist. You don't have to think about it.
They're like, here's...
Just deal with the racism.
Here's what you white folks think about when you hear inner city.
And it's really just like, I can't stress enough, like, how much of this is just presented to us. Like, it's just this alien, insane culture we've never seen before. Like, clearly everyone involved with making this movie is just white as fuck and think that, like, hip-hop music and shit is just, like, we're gonna be blowing the lid off this whole thing that's going on now. Like, white middle America's gonna see this and, whew, they're gonna lose their shit.
You do get some white folks in the film, but they're clearly the extras. And they're just, like, trashy-looking, like, wannabe gangster
Floridians.
White kids.
Yeah. Fucking pieces of shit.
A lot
Floridians.
Of, like, dirt stashes and bowl cuts. Ugh. Like, it's pretty cool.
So, yeah, we establish that this teacher, who's now got some sort of, like, beef with the local gang of Latino losers, is Behringer's girlfriend. He's just like, yo, honey, I've been excommunicated from my work as a CIA operative, black ops dude, or whatever. I'm just gonna start hanging around your apartment now. Like, is that cool? And she's like, yeah, sure. Except that, ooh, I got this beef with these kids, and now I've been kneecapped while I'm out jogging.
Well, not yet. First, he's like, tell me about your beef later. I gotta meet Joey Six at the titty club about a job. Don't leave out the titty club. Get to that real quick.
So we've got a random strip club scene for no reason, which is an 80s staple that I was very happy to see that's around in 1996. Because if there's one big hurdle this movie has, it's just like, well, we got an R-rated action movie, but it's set entirely in a high school with people who are all playing underage kids. How are we gonna get some titties in this movie?
Right.
So it's just like, we're going to have to set a scene randomly in a strip club for no reason.
And it worked.
So yeah, Joey Six is one of his mercenary crew. He goes and he meets him and he's just like, what about this job? And
he's like, it's probably drugs. I don't do drugs.
Is there a job? Does this scene ever come to anything? Or is it just like, we're in the strip club?
That's when he goes to Wolfson's house. Him and John Janis.
Suddenly, back to your theory that anytime this movie is not in the classroom, it's losing its way. Because once again, we're in a yuppie's house, and he's looking for mercs to work for him. So he's like holding auditions, and I'm just like, who is this guy?
Well, he's doing interviews.
What are
it's
we
just
doing?
John Janis happened to bring a demo reel.
There's fart jokes going on in here because this yuppie guy is on a bunch of fiber, like rich white yuppies are. So he's blowing huge farts in front of Behringer. Behringer's disgusted.
Right.
I'm too confused with wondering why I'm watching this to pay attention to anything they're saying to be like, this is why I want to hire you. This is what the job is. I'm just like, what does this have to do with being the substitute? When are we going to get him into the classroom?
It shows that just because he's a mercenary doesn't mean he's a killer, as he points out.
And eventually it all gets wrapped together because we don't
set of morals.
A single character in this movie who isn't involved in the eventual drug conspiracy in some way.
But he has a set of morals.
However many million people live in Miami, we happen to, every single person we meet are the people who are involved in this drug conspiracy.
Yeah.
Seems
that's how
a little convenient.
No, that's how far out it stretches, man.
Oh, this thing's big.
It's got its hooks in a lot of people.
Blow the lid off this fucking thing.
That's right. So then
she gets kneecapped.
He's like, what a terrible meeting. I gotta go home and find my lady.
Gotta go put some shorts on, because every time I go back home, I'm getting out of my merc gear and I'm putting on some comfortable shorts.
A comfortable polo tucked into comfortable
relaxing
shorts.
Relaxing in some purple shorts. We get a lot of that going on in this movie.
He looks awesome in this.
Costumed
him. Behringer. That's who.
Don't let Behringer wear his own clothes if he's supposed to be playing some sort of ultra badass.
But
it's not a good idea.
He's Joe Averman. He's dressed like everybody's dad or uncle in this movie. He's
dressed like Sideshow Bob.
Well, there's that too. But he looked pretty cool. So yeah, his lady gets kneecapped by a Samoan.
Yeah, and then, big old guy. So then Behringer gets in a, as you put it, any old white guy can do kung fu fight with him on the beach.
Yep.
That's maybe the most slow motion, pathetic looking action scene we've seen so far. Behringer's here on already Baby like, Oil and Blow.
Behringer's already like 60 by the time this movie. At least he doesn't Cadillac it and waiting for the guy to come to him a la Seagal.
That's right. And this is
he's aggressive.
This is out there on the beach. This isn't taking place at home, so he's not in his loose shorts. And he doesn't have those Chuck Norris action jeans, so when he's trying to throw these roundhouses, it's pretty brutal. You can hear like groin tears happening. There's sweat coming off of him. He just slowly pivots on one foot, slowly gets that foot around.
This movie, the
big gang member guy's just waiting for it. Oh, it connected.
Yeah, you got me. To Behringer's credit, this movie was filmed in the summer in Miami. It's got to be like a billion degrees down there.
I hope he had some talc down there.
He's got some pretty good sweat going in this movie. We've been pointing out sweat in films lately because this is 96, so you're starting to get to the point where like movies are going to like meticulously make sure that that's not in the movie unless they want
Everybody's
sweat in the
movie. Everybody's
got to
look attractive at all times. It's the opposite of the 70s where we're trying to make everyone in movies look as ugly as possible. Dudes like Donald Sutherland were the biggest stars.
Everybody
in the world.
Coming off a bender. That's what you want to see.
70s were weird.
Yeah, so Behringer's got some good sweat going, but who gets rid of the Samoan? Does he?
He just kind of runs off, I think.
Yeah, there's something happens. He gets the upper hand off. Somehow. Yeah. I don't know.
And then he goes back to take care of his lady, and she's beat up Nancy Kerrigan. Just like, why? Yeah. Why?
God.
And we're just like, oh, no, this seems pretty serious. Yeah. I don't think she's going to be able to teach at the high school anymore.
And she's not. So she's like, you got to call.
Insert Behringer having an idea.
Yeah. She's like, call this other dude. He'll substitute. And the old guy's like, well, I mean, like, I can, but just not for a week. And Behringer's like, I'll call you back in a week and I'll let you know if we need you or not. And
Behringer's like rubbing his chin like, I've never known any sort of school system where it was the teacher's responsibility to contact their own substitutes.
Yeah.
This seems like a strange system they've got set up.
Also, did her student orchestrate this attack?
I think so.
I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
Okay, yeah. So this is what Behringer's thinking. Yeah. He's like, I hear she's having some rough times. This seems out of nowhere this happened. Let me poke my nose in this school. I'm going to set myself up as this fake substitute, Mr. Smith. And this is where it really starts hitting me how dumb the script is. Like, he gets on the phone with some sort of like spook or whatever. Yeah. He's just like talking to me. He's like,
it's one of his guys.
How he needs his fake ID. I know. He's just like, give me some good academic credentials. I mean some good ones.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Behringer, you're not going to be able to pull off having good academic credentials at all. Nobody's going to buy this shit.
Some good ones. Does he say, give me a usual name or an unusual name?
Yeah, I think it's a joke where he's like, give me an unusual name.
Like
Mr. Smith.
Jim Smith.
Later on, we get the line where I'm Behringer. The bad guys are looking him up, and they're just like, he's a Harvard grad with a master's from Yale. Wait, make that two masters from Yale and a PhD from Princeton. And
I'm like,
these are literally the only three universities that the person writing the script could name. Like, he cashed out every university he'd ever heard of to write that fucking line.
This was 1996.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a good hacker, a good computer guy, you could fake everybody.
Oh, no problem. Just call
it
my
says
hacker
it.
Friend. And,
it's printed. It says it. It's got to be real. I got no way to find out otherwise.
Have him change the records at Princeton, Harvard, and Yale.
Yeah, it's legit. So Mr. Smith's legit.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Smith goes to high school.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that movie?
That's right. So he steps in. We get some more of this porn shot shit of just like, urban kids are crazy. One kid's freestyle rapping at him. Like, they got boom boxes all around. There's always that scene in these movies where like the boom box is playing and then the teacher has to come in and turn off the boom box.
Yeah.
Then everybody's just like, oh.
That's real.
What the fuck?
Ooh.
This shit's gonna pop off.
Can't
now.
Do that.
You don't
That's
turn
our tunes,
off our
brah.
Boom box. We're urban kids.
That's our tunes, brah. So to establish real quick, it's them versus him, you know.
Yeah. The kings of destruction. Another just complete white guy idea of what a gang would be named.
That's
not what a gang would be named.
But he's got the whole class is against him at first here. He's he's in over his head. Mm-hmm. He's bit off more than he could chew. So he's like, "Ooh, bad first day. I'm going to go
This is full on kindergarten cop chaos. Yeah. He does not have control of these kids. They're not listening to him. He's not able to teach at all. They're tossing cans of Coke at his back when he's trying to write on the blackboard. It's humiliating for him. Maybe this teaching job it's not all it's cracked up to be.
So he's like, "Oh, I got to find out more about this Mark Anthony kid." That's when he meets Raleigh, and he's all like, "Oh, I can't just be giving out files to anybody, you know?"
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's in my office.
This is where we get our first private touch of Ernie Hudson here, where he's just very against what you think of at Ernie Hudson. He's just very slimy, very cagey, and you're like, Ernie Hudson, I think, is playing a bad guy in this movie, and he's coming off like a real dick. He's doing a good job.
Yeah, he really does do a very nice job being a dick in this movie.
This is where he takes out the spanking paddle that he says has made for him every year. Karate fists through it and breaks it in Behringer's face and gives him his line, "Power perceived is power achieved."
That's it, yeah. And Behringer's like, "All right, touche. Touche. So Behringer's like, I'm gonna give it an old college try. I'm gonna get back at this."
He quickly picks out Mark Antony and is like, "This is the kid who's the problem. This is. I'm gonna make a plan here. Let me get my old gang together and ask them if they want to help me with this."
Right.
And I like his plan here, because his plan just sort of like, I gotta kill these high school kids.
Probably gonna.
They seem pretty rich though, so like, if you help me, there's probably gonna be money around you could rob.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole plan.
Yeah. Well, they're bad guys. Uh-huh. You know, robbing from the rich to give to the poor. He's kind of doing like a Robin Hood thing here, you know?
It works out. Right. I'm just saying, like, it worked. There ends up being money laying around, and they do get to rob it. I'm just saying, initially, I kind of be like, Behringer, I'm not so sure this is a real job you got us involved in here. This just seems like some weird personal shit you're into.
That's how our boy William Forsythe feels.
That's right,
And he's like, "I wanted a real job. Mm-hmm. What was wrong with doing that other job?
Right.
You're a dick.
He's making good points.
You're a dick. I ain't doing any of this."
That's when Behringer starts squeezing his nuts, right?
Yeah. And he's like, "Oh, this ain't good enough for you."
The scene with the yuppie earlier ends with Behringer squeezing his throat till the guy shits himself.
Yeah.
He's sick of hearing that guy talk. Now he's sick of hearing William Forsythe talk, so he just starts squeezing his nuts.
Yeah, he's like, "You didn't get
this this is a pattern with Behringer."
He's like, "You didn't get that last job because you don't got no balls." And then Behringer grabs his and he's like, "Oh, maybe I'll just borrow yours. What do you think?"
Yeah.
He's squeezing on him real hard, and Forsythe's mad, and the other guys are kind of laughing.
Nuts are getting squeezed.
And then for the second movie in the row, Forsythe makes it clear.
That's right.
He is not PC.
No.
He says, "Fucking queers. Come out of here."
Calling all his friends queers, seemingly just out of the movie at this point.
Yeah.
I was like, if that's all we got of Forsythe, it was worth it. It was worth having him in here.
He did.
He's quickly becoming a Baby Oil and Blow favorite. The next day, he's got his plan together.
Yeah.
So it's time to get his classroom together. And this is where a lot of the shit that goes down in the trailer that they played over and over again starts happening.
He comes in.
They try to throw a can at him again. He's ready this time. He fucking grabs it. He flings it back at this kid. They really play this as like it's devastating, like getting an empty soda can. It's like he's got a huge dent in his forehead, and he's just like down on the ground, woozy. He's like, "Whoa, Behringer can really whip a can."
Yeah, you weren't paying attention in the scene before when he's sitting in his bedroom throwing stars at the wall?
No, I was definitely paying attention. That was probably the most rapt attention I was paying to the movie the whole time.
Yeah.
Which later on, when he's got to gear up for some shit, it's just shown like explicitly, he's got a barrel of just loose ninja stars in his apartment. Like, that's how he lives.
Bullet points. He just ran right over it.
Barrel full of loose ninja stars.
I was going to get to it. Don't worry. He beats up a couple of the kids. That gets everybody else's attention.
He's all like, "Yo, Cholo, I know you got an ice pick. How about you give it to me?" Yeah. And the kid's just like, "Why don't you take it from me?" So Behringer's just like,
"Okay,
grab your finger and break it and pull it around your back." And do a bunch of little
Krav Maga your hand
just
move, off.
Just do some pressure point shit to you, and you're going to be crying. So then everybody in the classroom is like, "Wait a second. We thought this was some lame white guy, but he might be a fucking badass.
Yeah, if there's one thing we respect, it's beating ass.
So the first, we get like a protracted first act here. It's like all about establishing who these people are. The second act is where we get like all the typical classroom shit, where like he finally starts reaching these kids.
Yeah, how do I reach these through kids?
Them. In most movies, it's not you beat the shit out of them and gain their respect, but... Yeah. Substitute isn't much movie, so that's what goes on here.
Yeah, better movie.
So then we get a lot of scenes where he's starting to try to teach history now, and it's real lame and it's just funny instead to me. He's putting everything in the term of being in gangs, just like, this war is this gang fighting turf.
Yeah.
Fighting over turf with this other gang. And the kids are like, ooh, gangs and turf. Yes, yeah. I understand
this.
He's really getting
man.
Through to me now.
Yeah.
I thought he was lame, but man, this stuff seems really practical to know.
He's also just regaling them all with tales of him being a nom.
Then we were out of ammo, so I had to start ripping their throats out with my bare hands, and et cetera.
Which is cool.
Which is cool. You get some sort of like faraway-eyed, scarred-up, fucking crazy dude teaching class, telling you about killing people. That would have been one of the fastest ways to get everybody to shut up and pay attention back when I was in high school.
Lord knows I would have.
Oh,
yeah.
Hell yeah.
So, we meet again, Mad Magazine.
How do you know it's from Mad?
The year was 1968. We were on recon in a steaming Mekong Delta. An overheated private removed his flak jacket, revealing a t-shirt with an iron-on sporting the Mad slogan, up with miniskirts. Well, we all had a good laugh, even though I didn't quite understand it. But our momentary lapse of concentration allowed Charlie to get the drop on us. I spent the next 3 years in a POW camp, forced to subsist on a thin stew made of fish, vegetables, prawns, coconut milk, and four kinds of rice. I came close to madness trying to find it here in the States, but they just can't get the spices right.
My punishment?
Hmm? Oh, I'm going to have to think about that.
So now you start getting a little bit of the whole, like, Ernie Hudson don't necessarily trust Behringer. Behringer's not necessarily certain
he's
that
sniffing
Hudson's on the...
He's talking to Hudson. Something ain't right about this principal.
So they're going back and forth, and he's like, whatever. So
he's trying to fire him over beating those kids up, and he's all like, you can't fire me because union stuff. And Hudson's like, you're right. I can't fire somebody who just assaulted two kids.
Right.
That is written into the union, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I don't think it is. Thing you beat up a couple of high school kids as a teacher, you immediately get sent out of that school.
Yeah, so Hudson's like...
I guess this is Miami, though. It's very urban around here.
He's like, I don't really have 100% reason to not trust this guy, but I've seen enough to not trust this guy.
That's right.
I'm just going to have him killed by the gang. And, you know...
Works for me.
I'm all right with it because it just sends the film right to the races, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Wasting no time here. So he's like, hey, you know, kill Tom Behringer. And Mark Anthony's like, all right, we can do that. So they go to attack him and he's in the library.
Yeah, the library scene is where we get the iconic line that sold the trailer to everybody that got me out to watch this movie. That opening weekend, this library scene is probably like the focal point of the movie right here. You get some cat and mouse stuff where like he sees that they're coming to kill him. He runs into the library. They run after him. They're all packing. They all got pieces. You know, he's fucking Behringer, so that's not a big deal. Yeah. Not a big deal at all.
No, he put on a bulletproof vest because he saw them outside. He's getting ready.
He's cat and mousing with them through the stacks. Eventually, disarms one of them, gets all their guns, and we get some comical shit with like one of those rolling ladders that you get in like old-timey libraries that certainly do not exist in urban Miami high school libraries.
No.
But, you know, for the purposes of Behringer pushing a kid out of a fucking three-story window, we're going to have one in here, gets him on that ladder, pushes the ladder all the way down, kid goes flying through a fucking window, splats on the ground. It's great shit right there.
It's good. It's good stuff. Good Bugs Bunny stuff. What was the big line in this one?
This is where they're just like, oh, fucking... And he says, shh, no talking in the library.
Brendan!
What?
What are you doing here?
Shh.
Sorry, my fault. Forgot it was a library. Why don't you crucify a guy for fucking nothing? So what are you doing?
I came here to study.
Okay? Yeah, me too. What a couple of losers we are, huh?
Yeah, Coach, you're bleeding. Do you know that?
Yeah, I know. Men bleed, Brendan. What we do.
Okay, I'm gonna go find a quiet corner.
Hey.
What?
Come here.
What? I gotta...
Come here. Come
what?
Here.
Okay, what?
Look what I did to the card catalog. I took all the cards out and threw them all over. Huh? That is hilarious. No one will ever be able to use this again.
Coach, you're really angry and weird right now.
Brendan.
What?
Brendan, let's get out of here.
Why? I have to
Because they're not like us here.
But I'm here...
Brendan, we're different. All right?
What do you
mean?
We're
not studiers. We're not the worker ants. We're the queens. You and me are the queen bees. Yeah.
What does that mean?
We should be running it, man. We can't be doing this.
But I have
sticking
to...
our noses in books. We're not like that, man.
Shh.
You shh. Brendan.
What?
Brendan, get on my back and let's get the hell out of here.
I'm not getting on your back.
Get on my back and let's go, man. Let's go. Get on my back and let's ride. I'm talking here.
Okay, I gotta go study.
I'm gonna take a nap, all right?
Okay.
You meet me later.
All right.
And then once again, like he whipped that can,
yeah,
starts
right.
whipping library books at them off like a book cart.
Ninja
and they're all like, holy shit,
everybody.
This guy must be practicing with ninja stars all day long. He could,
he's like, I've been waiting
he could turn
for this.
Anything into a weapon. He's like Bullseye from the Marvel movies
he's pretty
in this
cool.
movie. That's what Behringer's got going
he's
on.
He's cool at throwing stuff, including people out
and
of windows.
You want to talk about the sweat in the movie. This is by the end of this library scene where he takes all five of these kids and individually throws each one out the window. He is soaked in sweat.
Just three kids and two adults.
All the way through. Okay, yeah. And yeah, because the security guard comes too, acting
turns
like
out
he's going to break
security.
Shit up.
Yeah.
But Behringer's like, I know you're on the payroll. You're in here with the kids. So he's the guy who gets his fucking disarmed first, and then they all look like chumps. Behringer's soaked through his shirt so much, they acknowledge it, and they have him take his shirt off. This is also to reveal that he has a bulletproof vest on, and that's why he didn't die when he gets shot in the chest.
Yeah.
But then I think, like, the old lady female librarian's in there, and, like, I think Behringer's supposed to be, like, putting off some vibes here. Like,
some
I think she's
vibes,
supposed to be like, ooh, he took that shirt off, and now I'm getting all...
Ooh, if I could still get wet.
This
Ooh.
Old crusty vag of mine is, Ooh. It's like when the reactor gets restarted at the end of a Total Recall and everything's coming back to life and there's, you know, there's dust around, dust clouds, but then it all starts moving. That's what's going down in her nether regions. I'm just like, okay, movie, you could sell me on the fact that Behringer's a badass. You're not going to sell me on the fact that Tom Behringer is a sexual being who women are gooing over.
Come on, Cohagen, you got what you want. Give this people air.
This is a step too far.
He's got a little bit of charm about him, you know? So.
Agree to disagree on that one.
So he
Maybe
knows...
in Major League.
He knows for a fact. He had his buddies come and bug the place up. So he knows Raleigh's dirty. And then he comes to find out he's not just dirty. He's got some kind of drug trade thing going on with these guys.
Him and Mark Antony are working hand in hand. The main gang kid and the principal. It's...
Well, he knows Raleigh's
it's a conspiracy.
Connected to the gang somehow, and he knows the gang definitely has some drug thing going on because they end up staking out a fruit stand, and Mark Antony swaps BMWs.
Okay, this
with
is all more stuff where I was just like not paying much attention.
Well, it's important because this is where we get Forsythe back.
Yeah, Forsythe shows up during their stakeout. Yeah, there's a drug deal going on, and like Behringer and his dudes go and break it up and rob both sides. Like,
yeah.
We're going to kill the guys with the drugs. We're going to take these high school kids' fucking money they got for the drugs. But Forsythe crashes the party and is like, oh, big fucking Indian guy or whatever is here again. The same one that kneecapped Jane. So he's just like, got a gun on Behringer. He's like, shouldn't have squeezed my nuts, Behringer. Now I'm going to ruin this whole thing for you. Let this big old strapping brown man beat your ass.
Yeah.
So then we get Behringer versus Big Guy. Part two.
Yeah.
This one's a little bit better. He's moving a little bit better in this scene. Maybe because he couldn't get his footing in the sand. The first one was in the
Could
beach.
Could have been.
A little bit of that going on.
It's hard
on.
To run in sand, you know?
Hard, so definitely.
Yeah. So Behringer's getting his ass kicked by the dude. And then finally Forsythe's like, ah, it's just fucking
with
you.
Yeah, it was just a psych. He's still a good guy.
I'm on your side. So they make short work. They high five. And then they're like, we got the whole gang back together.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take this high school down.
That's right. We get some more scenes in here, though, with, like, Behringer and his girlfriend, where he's, like, in his purple shorts, and, like, he's seducing her, and she's wearing, like, striped overalls with, like, a white t-shirt under them that looks like some sort of diaper fetish video where took a grown woman and tried to dress her up like a 4-year-old kid or something.
Yeah.
There is no sexual chemistry on the screen for what I'm seeing, but like this is all shot like it's this smoldering shit.
Jumping ahead a little bit, it doesn't matter because a lot of the stuff, like you said, is ancillary. Mm-hmm. They have a love scene, or like the start of one where they start making out and whatever, and he like kicks the lamp on accident.
Ooh, yeah.
And you said how awkward they are, their chemistry. Uh-huh. I wrote down in my notes here, more awkward than the Blade Runner love scene.
I mean, yeah, and neither of these people are supposed to be robots, as far as I know.
Where Harrison Ford possibly rapes that woman.
Yeah, that's right. It was a different time, though. Ford could get away with that shit.
Yeah, it was the early 80s.
I get some real melodramatic dialogue during these scenes, too, where he's just like, the craziest thing happened in class yesterday. Yeah. I was talking, and I turned around, and I noticed the kids were listening.
We get this
shit where it's supposed to be like Behringer's getting so inspired like by teaching, and like it's changing who he is or whatever, and it's just like, no, it's not. Like, that doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't become a teacher. He literally blows up this entire high school at the end, doesn't care about it. Like, why are we wasting times on these fucking Michelle Pfeiffer-esque scenes where we're pretending like, you know, the magic of teaching is happening or something? That's not what this movie's about. That's not what it is. Wasting my time. This is the 14 minutes that could have got fucking cut out of this thing to get us down to 100 minutes.
What we've glossed over here is he starts getting like the kids in the school on his side.
Yeah, at least a couple of them.
Putting that drug money.
One girl, I forget the girl's name.
Back into the school.
They're good kids,
getting them
Matt.
Stuff.
Yeah, he takes the drug money he stole and buys them like a bunch of VCRs. And I'm like, honey, why are you helping this school by buying them a bunch of VCRs?
He's doing nice stuff for me. Buys them up.
Throws a pizza party.
Papa John's
Nothing
pizza
better
party.
Than a pizza party when you're in public school. Like those were the salad days right there.
Yeah, like Raleigh's coming to like get Behringer because he thought Behringer was dead, and he's like, oh, I gotta get this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like gonna go get the
instead
drop
he's
on
out
him.
Pizza.
But instead he's already like in the office, like, hey, I'm making my own announcements. I'm Tom Behringer.
Behringer's doing a lot of Bugs Bunny shit here to poor Elmer Fudd, aka Principal Raleigh.
Yeah. So they go back and forth doing this for a while. Finally, like, Raleigh's like, all right, fuck it. I'm going all in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to kill this guy.
Yeah.
Got to kill this guy good once and
Again.
For all. So they
Nothing like that library debacle. I want something very efficient and, like, for sure this time.
They try to kill him. They shoot at him.
When he's driving his truck.
Crashes through a trailer that somebody lives in.
Just through a random double wide.
Which is cool.
Gets ran
Looks
off the
cool,
road,
though.
Plows through a fucking trailer.
Just a nice little practical stunt, you know?
And then, like, the next scene, everybody's just like, well, Tom Behringer's dead. And it's like, you think so? Because you missed him when you shot at him. And then he ran his truck through a trailer, which aren't very sturdy. I see no reason to believe why that would have killed him.
Yeah.
These criminals are dum-dums. Once again, they failed to kill Tom Behringer and just assumed that he's dead.
They did kill one of the black teachers, though.
Oh, yeah, Daryl.
Yeah.
He's Jane's seemingly only friend and the only other teacher I think that we see like in this high school during
this
entire movie.
Yeah, we should give him a little bit of credit. We can talk about him for a second.
So, he's after school with the one like female student of Behringer's who's cool. They're hanging out, but then they stumble upon Mark Antony and Ernie Hudson doing some full-on drug deal shit in the school.
Real quick
in the Freddy Krueger boiler room. This is where they're doing all their deals.
Real quick on Daryl, though. Like you said, he's Jane's only friend. He's the first one to figure out that Mr. Smith is Shale,
That's
Jane's
right.
lover. He finds that out, and then
he goes
to Behringer with it, and Behringer's like, look, you know, you can help me, but we got to take down Raleigh. Raleigh's bad. And then Daryl's like, he's a racist. You don't like to see a black man in power.
Raleigh is going to run for office. He's going to clean up this whole town. Raleigh is my best friend. I love him. That all comes back around you because he gets his thugs to chase you with machine guns, eventually into the gymnasium, and then you try to get away by climbing the rope in the gym while they're just all surrounding you with guns, which is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. It's just, I fully feel like going back to this dumb script. They were just like whiteboard brainstorming. Just like, what do you remember from school? What do you remember from school? Climbing the rope in gym class. Let's get that in there somewhere. Squeeze that in there somehow.
Squeeze the nuts in there somehow.
We're going to have, in a cartoonish fashion, Daryl, the other teacher, is going to try and run away from machine guns by climbing up a rope towards nothing.
Just to get out. Climbed by Mark Anthony and have his hands stabbed.
It doesn't work, though, because they knock him down, and then Ernie Hudson himself doesn't even have one of his thugs do it. Shoots him right in the butt, from what looked like to me.
Yeah, dead in the ass.
It looked like he shot him in the ass, and then he's dead. An old girl, the young high school student, whose name I don't remember, and I'm not going to look
Lisa.
Up. Lisa. She witnesses the whole thing, but they don't know she's there. So now we got
Daryl's
a witness to Ernie Hudson committing full-on butt murder.
Daryl's like, hey, you need to fire Mr. Smith. Tell him everything. Motherfucker was right. I'm going to get you out of here. I'm going to save you. And he like sacrifices himself. It's noble. All right. After he gets run off the road, he shows back up at school and he's like, this is bullshit. Like, I'm going to get these guys, but he's being cool about it. Ernie Hudson sees him and he's like, what?
Ghost.
So he gets Mark Anthony. He's like, fuck school. You and I, we got to get our out of here. Like, this guy's nuts. And so Behringer goes to like the principal's office, like, I'm going to get this guy. Mm-hmm. And his secretary's like, he's gone. He, I don't know where he is. The only appointment he has is at 3:30. And Behringer's like, whoa. Where's you going at 3:30?
I got it penciled in here. Meeting with drug dealers.
Yeah. Meeting with the drug dealer's other guy, the yuppie,
who's
at the highlight court.
Somehow. I still have no idea exactly what he was doing for anybody. What
all
he
right.
Was
so
like
he goes
to this
he
whole
goes
scheme.
And he finds the yuppie and he's like, how are you involved in this? Blah, blah, blah. He starts beating the
yuppie
up
tries
with
to attack
his highlight
him by flinging balls at him.
Yeah.
He's flinging highlight balls at him, which is funny.
He ducks the one.
That just pisses Baron off.
And then takes another one to the ankle and is like, all right, now I'm pissed.
He gets beamed pretty good.
Like, now I'm just going to beat the shit out of you with your own highlight helmet.
That's pretty cool. He takes the helmet off and just starts hitting him in the face with it over and over again.
Yeah, it's pretty good scene. So yuppie guy's like,
those two old guys are just weaving more highlight fucking hooks or whatever.
Yeah.
Just like ignoring it while Behringer's beating the shit out of this.
They don't
want
to get hit.
I know. It's
they're smart.
It was a fun little touch. I thought it was funny.
So yeah, Behringer's like, you know, what's your meeting about? How are you related? And he's like, well, I'm not. And he's like, oh, when I was there at your house the other day for that job.
That's right.
And he's like, yeah, pretty much. We were looking for mercenaries to guard the drugs as they came in off the lake so the Mexican gang could get the drugs, take them back to the school to put the drugs on the buses or they put the drugs on the buses, off the boats, to the school, to the secret spot.
It's a great little setup.
And then they sell the drugs in the school. And Behringer's just like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
People need to pay now.
Yeah.
That's it.
So finally, we're at the third act,
yeah.
Which is just one gigantic action scene, which is fucking cool
as
shit.
In a school.
It's just like, we know all this drug shit's going on at the school. I'm going to get my guys together. Behringer gets Guzman. He gets fucking Joey Six. Is that his name?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. First, before that, we fucked up. He ends up stumbling, or he's back at his place like, I'm going to get all my weapons. I'm going to get my dudes. And then he gets the phone call from Jane where she's acting all weird. And he's like, something's up here.
That's Jerome and Tina or whatever.
Yeah.
Gone looking for him to tell him about the murder of Daryl, but they're ready for him. So Mark Antony fucking ambushes them at Jane's apartment. He's got them all tied up and duct taped.
Yeah.
This is when Behringer's like, I sense a problem. She wouldn't have called me like that unless something was wrong. Let me start digging around in my barrel full of loose
ninja
stars.
Let me get a handful of ninja stars and head on over there.
Just going to jock some ninja stars before I go to this meeting.
He does. It goes back and forth. They beat some people up. Jerome ends up shooting Mark Anthony.
Oh, yeah. He saves Behringer at the last second by blowing Mark Anthony away. And then like he's all like, oh, I'm shooken up by this. And it's like, come on, Jerome.
So
you've been wanting to shoot Mark Anthony this whole movie.
So that's when Behringer's like,
quit
here
being
we go.
A pussy.
This is it. And he sends Mark Anthony and one of the other dudes back in the BMW to the fruit stand with like a message being like, ho ho ho, now I have a machine gun. Let's do this. And they're like, let's do this. We're going to the school.
They go to the school to steal all the drugs, which are down under the floorboards.
And they're all like, oh no, the drugs. We got to get back to the school, which leads to the big
yuppie guy sends all of his mercenaries that he... So this is the thing. We got...
John Janus and his crew of mercenaries.
We've got two teams of mercenaries who are going to get in a gigantic machine gun fight
in the school.
Which is...
suppressed machine guns.
Not where you really would think that this sort of movie with this concept would be going. Like a former military tough guy is a substitute in a dangerous school. Like, you don't picture teams of dozens and dozens of guys in a gigantic machine gun fight where bazookas get involved and grenades get involved and they
But I'm glad they did.
You'd think that, like, how this basically, like, would lead to a thing. It's just like, okay, like, things go back and forth between the gang and the teacher, and then eventually it ends with them locked in the school, and there's maybe, like, six or seven gang members, and they're in there locked in alone with the teacher, and they think they got him, but he, like, one at a time goes through them Die Hard style before he beats the last one. But that's not what this is at all. It, like, totally turns into a different movie, and we're in literal bazooka fights, just two teams of special ops people shooting bazookas at each other.
Yeah.
And it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. Who
brings a bazooka to a drug caper? They were just trying to steal some drugs.
Joey Six does. One of the best parts too. Mm-hmm. So like, it starts like outside. They're kind of like looking things over and whatever. And they're like, oh shit, like we're shooting them outside. And then they're like, oh, they're making their way in now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like,
get a lot of,
they're
like,
talking to each other on the radio.
Binoculars and shit.
Luis Guzman's like, there's a team of six of them in the front, and there's another team of eight of them coming around to
Guzman
the back,
Tom Berenger.
And they're like, oh, shit. And so Berenger's like, hey, William Forsythe, you're down in the basement. Get ready for some action.
Yeah.
To which Forsythe just starts doing that Indian war dance.
Sure.
For no reason.
Just get a... some more offensive stuff out of Forsythe.
It's not for no reason. It's because he's got a real hard-on to kill Jackie Glades, famed... not to be confused with the other big Samoan dude earlier. This is a completely different thing who just gets dropped halfway into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Famed Miami drug dealer Jackie Glades.
Gotta take him out.
The Native American.
Forsythe's been dying to take him out.
Yeah.
He brings up all the drugs with explosives, which is pretty cool, because, like, he knows they're going to be coming for those first off. That's what they want to do, is get all those drugs out of there. So as soon as they fight their way to the bad guys fight their way to the drugs, Forsythe's just like, oop, trigger this shit, explosion.
Cocaine.
Now this entire room
everywhere
is covered in cocaine everywhere. And eventually
it looks like Sheryl Crow's dressing room in 1996.
It leads to the big final fight between Berenger and Hudson, where they're literally just taking handfuls of cocaine and throwing them at each other, having a cocaine fight.
Pretty
which
cool.
is fucking cool as hell.
So they're shooting up the entire school. One by one, Berenger's dudes start going down.
Yeah.
Of course, the first guy to get it is the black guy in the group.
Yeah, which he could get some cool, like, fucking taking people out with, like, gymnastics and knife shit before he gets taken out, though.
While wearing a mesh top,
for sure,
or mesh tank top.
He looks good as
underneath
hell.
His flak vest or
he
whatever.
Looks good as hell.
Yeah, he looks real cool.
Takes out like 8 or 10 guys, just like stabbing the shit out of him before he... Guzman gets cornered up on the roof. They're firing machine gun shit at him. He's hunkered down behind a vent or something, and then he tries the strategy of just running towards the machine gun fire.
Yeah,
it doesn't work out too great for him.
But they don't kill Guzman. Guzman goes out on his own
terms.
Yeah,
that's true. He does do that cool thing you get in an action movie every once in a while where you think a person's dead, but then they're really just like cradling a grenade with like pinfold.
He does like old girl at the end of
Red Dawn.
Fucking Red Dawn.
Red Dawn's
Red
this
Dawn's
dude.
The shit out of
they
that
pull
guy.
Guzman's corpse over to make sure he's dead, and he's just like, "Oh, peekaboo, motherfucker!" Boom. And Berenger's like, "What's that explosion up on the roof? That's probably not good."
Then he radios him.
Hudson gets the drop on Forsythe, and he unfortunately smokes him.
Because
Forsythe's in the middle of what seems like it's going to be a real cool monologue, but then, like, fucking Hudson gets the drop on him and like take. And I was like, oh, fucking, yeah. What a heel move right there. Yeah, I wanted to hear what Forsythe cool was going to start. I bet he's going to say all sorts of like offensive shit. That would have been cool to hear.
Yeah, because he got the drop on old Jackie Glades and had him tied up and was being like, I'm going to scalp you.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going
to
scalp
you. About to say some real racist stuff. Oh, Ernie Hudson out of nowhere.
Oh, damn you.
Eventually, this builds up to the big Behringer Hudson cocaine fight. We finally got like the main bad guy versus the main good guy. And, you know, Behringer's Behringer, so yeah. Behringer takes him out. He wins the day.
They're fighting. They get out of the basement, goes elsewhere. They're fighting in the hallway. And Ernie Hudson gets the drop on him for a second, but then he gets too full of himself. So Behringer ties up his arm. And then gives him a death blow.
That's right. That's right.
He gives him the straight the death blow to the face.
Cool thing they used to do where it was like, did you know if you palm strike somebody right in the perfect spot, you could shove their nose bone up into their brain and kill them?
Instantly.
Fucking. Pretty sure that's not a true thing, but we used to think it was in action movies back in the day, and it fucking happens in this movie for fucking sure. Hudson, bone in the brain. Dead as shit.
Yeah.
Good news is we found out Joey Six, even though he got shot up, he's still alive,
still
man.
Still alive.
So we get like a nice...
He's got enough wherewithal to be like...
Walking off into the sunset.
We gotta get the fuck out of here.
Scene where they're just like... It's just Behringer and Joey Six walking off into the...
You don't get a lot of this anymore. Just a nice little walk-off, little soft banter as the credits start.
Some police sirens in the distance.
Yeah.
And we get one more offensive thing, I think.
Correct.
Joey Six calls calls someone retards.
Well, no, because he's like, we gotta get out... Or... Joey Six is like, we got to get out of this place. And Behringer's like, oh, how about L.A.? You know, we can both become teachers out there. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're crazy. He's like, you know, you could be a P.E. teacher.
That's right.
And he goes, P.E.? What? Do I look retarded?
Yeah.
That's a really unnecessary line.
He's got really great academic credentials, though. I could see that being a good use of his, you know, his skills that have been established
Joey Six,
throughout this whole movie.
Joey Six legitimately did go to Harvard, Yale, and Princeton.
Wow.
That's why he's like, what do I look retarded?
Impressive.
Yeah, like, that's why he was so offended.
There's some good banter here, though, and I'm just, why are we establishing that Joey Six is still alive and not giving us the further adventures of fucking Slate and Six or whatever? Like,
because
come on.
Joey Six is in Substitute 2.
Oh, does he make it in there? I thought it was a whole new deal, just Treat Williams doing his own thing.
It's not the same actor playing Joey Six.
Oh, bummer.
But they originally...
This actor, I do recognize him from being in like a handful of Seagal movies. I think he was like one of Seagal's boys. I don't really recognize him from anything else.
He's in Training Day.
Ooh.
He's in a couple other
no
things.
No memory of that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Pretty sure he was like friends with Seagal, which is pretty cool.
But yeah, they were going to have him and Behringer be in Substitute 2.
Which would have ruled.
But then Behringer...
I would have loved to have seen it.
Behringer was like, I don't want to do that. And so...
Fucking lame.
That's when they got Treat Williams.
Turns out he is retarded.
And so they just have... It was Joey Six that says the retarded line, not Behringer, sir. So it turns out they just have... the new Joey Six reference Behringer's character in Substitute 2.
This is why I've not seen any of the sequels, which I think there's like
four
of them now.
Well, there's, Substitute, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
One of these days it'll be like a rainy Sunday and I'll just plow through all the sequels.
One day I'll find all four of them on one convenient disc at a Walmart.
Yeah, I was going to say, better start digging around that Walmart bin because that's where it's going to be.
Well, before Substitute enters the Walmart discount bin, it's going to enter Judgment Day, Nate.
Get ready.
In 1998, 6 million violent incidents took place in American high schools, including 29,927 teacher fatalities. The public school system has been reduced to a battlefield. But the Board of Education has just found a solution. The perfect solution.
You're next, Mr. Cope.
For the class of 1999.
What are you?
The class of 1999.
These androids were supposed to educate the students.
Battle droids, Miles. Battle droids.
To graduate is to survive.
Remember the good old days when guns killed people.
Uh-oh. You have the right to remain disgusting.
Corpses didn't talk back.
How do you fight this thing?
Maybe we could drown it in A1 sauce.
And cops who died for the force stayed that way.
Sit down.
Treat Williams, Joe Piscopo, Dead Heat. Rated R.
Substitute is about
your
to get...
Your lies for facts.
Yeah, I see what
That's
you
a
did.
Song,
there.
Remember?
Yeah. Substitute.
Maybe one of the only songs from that band I don't mind.
Treat Williams for Behringer. Substitute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fun.
One Mexican guy to another guy that I don't know is necessarily Mexican, but he was in The Crow.
Substitute. Oh, that guy from Crow 2, City of Angels. Is he in a substitute too?
No, it's the guy. Maybe he is in City of Angels. Angel David is the actor's name. Yeah, I don't know.
Never heard that name before.
I don't know. Yeah. Either way, it's time for the report card for the substitute.
That's right. This is Judgment Day. This is typically where I look out to the internet folks and see what they have to say about this movie before we say what we have to say, our final thoughts. But there's a little bit of a curveball this week because there's just not too many people out there willing to give Substitute a one-bullet review, Matt.
Yeah, they don't want Behringer coming over to their house and fucking them up.
Like, fucking Behringer did the deal here, and the ones you do give one bullet reviews are just a lot of like, this movie's stupid, and if you like it, it's stupid. And I'm like,
that's very
this
mature.
Very interesting. This isn't interesting to read.
No, we got a show to fucking
do. So I'm doing
a
curveball here. Old Chicago legend, a real professional, Roger Ebert, happened to have given The Substitute a one bullet review.
I'll allow it.
So I'm going to pull some excerpts here. Professional critic, this isn't what we usually do, but he's got some complaints about The Substitute.
You know what would have made this movie better, Nate?
Some of those spy kids?
Yeah, they were kids in the class.
No, this is 1996. Oh. This isn't quite crazy aughts Ebert yet. So Ebert says, I am so very tired of this movie. I see it at least once a month. The title changes, the actors change, and the superficial details of the story change, but it is always about exactly the same thing. Heavily armed men shooting at one another. Even the order of their deaths is preordained. First the extras die, then the bit players, then the featured actors, until finally only the hero and the villain are left. Yeah, it's called story structure, Ebert. Look it up.
Yeah.
Of course, there are a few human moments, spaced out sparingly, to lend the formula interest. I found a real warmth in the scenes between Venora and Behringer, a feeling genuine enough that it could have graced a better movie. Gotta disagree with that one with Ebert right there. Fucking no warmth to Behringer in purple shorts kicking lamps over.
He knows the acting chops of a Behringer.
And Glenn Plummer as the heroic teacher Mr. Sherman puts in an interesting performance. He liked Daryl in the two scenes he was in.
Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with Ernie Hudson's evil principal either, except for the screenplay he finds himself in. The movie's problem is that it's not interested in these characters, not even as interested as we are. They are simply a means of getting to the payoff scenes.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Shale gets shot at on a highway and throws some thugs out of the high school library window and finds out about the drugs and engages in two lengthy shootouts, one in Jane's apartment, the other one in the corridors of the high school. The architecture of a routine movie shootout is by now well rehearsed. A man appears in frame, holding a gun. We can see down a corridor next to him. He jumps out, shoots, jumps back again. Variations of this move are done a dozen ways. It's like a computer game. Occasionally dialogue is added. You don't teach history anymore. You are history.
Nice.
Good line. It's all so boring. During The Substitute, I idly noted that about 20 men had been firing heavy automatic weapons for half an hour, and that they had also used a bazooka and a grenade.
Yeah.
Didn't the neighbors call the cops? In the final moments of the film, Shale and a sidekick answer my objection.
There you go.
The drug kingpin had paid off the cops.
Yeah.
But the explosions also set off the sprinkler system, Matt. And so presumably the school's fire alarms were triggered. Had Rolly paid off the fire department too? Do firemen routinely shrug and let high schools burn? You see how desperately the mind seeks out interesting topics as a distraction while an exhausted genre wheezes out one more lap around the track. 1 star from Sun Times critic Roger Ebert.
It's 1996. I mean,
really,
with
He was really getting caught up in the details of the substitute. Yeah, fucking take a chill pill, man. Just,
either way.
Luckily, there were a couple fucking real wackos out there giving the substitute 5-bullet reviews.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I was able to find
a couple
interesting fucking reviews here to give the other side of the story. Maybe take Ebert to task. Maybe the critics didn't like this one so much, but the people are on its side. This first 5-bullet review is from Amazon user Anna Marie One. She says, ditto what I just said for the sequel, The Substitute 2 Schools Out. I love Tom Berenger. I haven't seen him in so long. What a treat to watch him in this movie. Well, I am a little biased. I think he's the handsomest, most manly that ever graced the screen. Gee, I'm going to Google him after I finish this review. Wonder whatever happened to him.
She's got to Google those dong pics.
So special to see Mark Antony playing a really bad guy. He's so young and adorable in this movie. 5 bullets from boned up Amazon user Anna Marie One.
Anna Marie's thirsty one.
She's in this movie for the man meat. Yeah. They don't even get much on display other than that sweaty library scene.
Yeah.
This next 5-bullet review is not in this movie for the man meat. Amazon user Hawkeye is taking a different approach to this. Teachers love this one. Movie gets a little hokey towards the end, but speaking as a former school teacher / administrator, I love it.
/ cop / skydiver.
Especially the part where the substitute teacher throws a student out the second floor window. I never got to do that. But I did take on 4 armed Nazi youths looking for trouble. That was fun. 5 bullets from Amazon user Hawkeye.
Well, how do we find out more about that?
I'm just going to have to, I don't know, see if there's an email address attached to this or something. How'd you take down those 4 armed Nazi youth, Hawkeye?
Yeah, I don't like him going into business for himself and not, you know, paying off the T's here.
This is a weird little, this is the only one I found where they were claiming they were a teacher, but just a lot of the 5-bullet reviews were just like, we need more teachers like this in our schools today. I was like, we need more murderous ex-CIA agents killing students in our school?
Yeah.
I guess so. Maybe that's true. What's true is that you have your own opinions, Matt.
I do.
So we'd like to hear some of them right now, and we'd like to hear how many bullets you think the substitute earned.
This one got a couple runs through the old VCR ute, especially with 2 brothers.
Spent some time watching this on HBO.
96, you know, yeah, it's good early teen years, whatever, and we like this kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
I really haven't seen it since then.
Put some hair on your chest, this movie.
I haven't seen it in a long while.
Me either. It felt pretty fresh to me.
Yeah.
I got a lot of the scenes conflated with scenes from High School High.
Absolutely. There's glimpses I remembered, but whatever. It's had some Berenger.
Tommy B.
He's old and fucking major league.
Mm, boy, is he. He's playing the grizzled vet.
He's 7 years older in this.
Even in Platoon, he's like the commander.
Old. Yeah,
he's like
right.
20 years older than everyone else. So it makes you wonder, like, how old is Tom Berenger? And was he ever young?
But, you know, getting old happens to all of us. So
I'm living forever.
I'm not going to fault him for any of it. It's not his fault. He does what he can, and I think he does a nice job with it.
Still did that slow motion roundhouse kick. It's what the script called for.
Like we talked about, the script isn't without its faults. The story and the parts that don't make sense.
Going out on a limb there.
And as we established from the get-go, this movie really, its bread and butter is when it's at the school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like they do a pretty good job for the most part. Anytime they're not at the school, they kind of rush back to try to get it into the school.
Mm-hmm.
I think whoever was editing it realized that fact.
It seemed like there was much more story going on in this thing that just got swept under the rug.
Yeah, and that's fine with me.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think we needed that.
I do not need a 130-minute substitute movie. No, thank you.
For the stuff that sucks or is out of place or you don't really want to watch, one of the good things is The movie doesn't make you wait a long time in between action scenes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's always something going on every other scene.
If there's not action, at least there's some hip-hop over the soundtrack.
Or somebody's going to get hit, or somebody's going to die, or somebody's wearing a crazy 1996 Method Man shirt while walking down the hallway.
Or dude's blowing big farts.
That happened too. So yeah, action. Action's the star here, not just Tom Berenger, but action. And they do a good job of it. I like what's there. The beach fight is a little hard to watch, but, you know, it's a...
harder to perform.
80-year-old man fighting a giant guy on a beach in 200-degree weather, so he gets a pass. End scene kicks ass. It all builds towards it. It's what we wanted. Everybody goes out in a blaze of glory. It's a watchable movie for me, man. I don't... think I should give it a full 3 for good, because it definitely has faults. But I'm gonna give it 2.5.
2.5 bullets.
It's just a little under it's good, very but it's very watchable.
Fair score.
I had a fun time with it.
I'm right there with you this week. There's gonna be no big blow-ups. This is not a good movie. As I'm gonna say, this is a bad movie. I would go as far as to say that. But it's also really stupid in all the ways that I like. There's farts and poop, like I said. There's that strip club scene for no reason, like I said. Oh. So they found a way to throw some boobs in
Not
there.
Only a strip club scene, but it was on Uzi night.
Yeah. Berenger's scarred up and grizzled and doing his Tommy B thing, which I love. The ending is a gigantic explosion of violence for no reason. There was no reason for this movie to go so big and for them to pay for all these explosions, and they did it. So I appreciate for that. This is mindless popcorn flick good times. I'm also giving it 2.5 bullets. I can't Smart give that man. 3 because that's one I'm going to reserve for, like, you know, it had some problems, but it was good.
Yeah.
This is not good. It's just fun.
Yeah, there's a difference. And that's what I mean when I say watchable. Like, it's the fun carries it, you know?
I'm not too good for this. I'm not above the substitute. Yeah,
no, I'm not above the law.
No one is. Fucking Seagal is going to teach us that someday when we watch Above the Law.
Mercy. But that's not what we're watching next week, is it, Nate?
Nah, next week we're sticking with our back-to-school theme, sticking with our teachers versus students theme. We're going to see who does it best, because we're going to be watching Mark Lester's off-the-fucking-grid insane sequel to Class of 1984. Mm-hmm. It's Cyborg Killer Teachers versus Students in Class of 1999. Which I remember loving quite a bit when I was a kid. Probably won't hold up when we watch it as adults, but it'll be a fun time. After that, our schedule gets a little dicey. We'll have to hash it out, but Class of 1999, next week for sure.
If you haven't seen the original, just jump right into the sequel. It doesn't matter.
Oh, no, they
just
don't connect.
Just like when I saw National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets.
Yeah.
I didn't need to see
that
first
actually
one.
That's the way to watch it, I think. Yeah. See the second one, then maybe go back and watch the first one.
We encourage you to do whatever you want, whenever you want, right here on Baby Oil and Blow. Most Stay small. Single.
Stay single.
Yeah.
It's a long road when you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. And every new town just seems to bring you down, trying to find peace of mind can break your heart. Use a friend.